We're talking ghosts of country music. That was Patsy Cline you just heard. Matthew Swain with us. We'll get to your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Matthew Swain with us. Ghosts of country music. When you wrote Haunted Rock and Roll, Matthew, tell me your approach there.
My approach there was just to go out. You know, again, I knew that there was some occult legends, so I immediately started to try to figure out, using some of these ideas, that tragedy, bigger-than-life personalities tend to attract the most ghost stories. And so I started with those folks and tried to find places where they lived, and then I would use online sources to see if I could find any ghost stories around there. And then from that point, I would try to seek out firsthand accounts or talk to ghost hunters who might investigate those areas. Some of the places I have been, just coincidentally, but I didn't incorporate a lot of those stories into it.
Stadiums can be haunted too, you say?
Yeah, they sure can. There are a few, especially in country music
cities,
ghost lore. For instance, Shreveport Municipal Auditorium is one. I talked about it earlier. It's the home of Louisiana Hayride, and it's been investigated. They're very open to ghost hunters. At least when I was writing that, they let people in to investigate. And they say, I think it's located on Elvis Presley Boulevard there. So it's haunted by Elvis. Hank Williams is there, Patsy Cline. And there have been these EVPs, these recordings of Johnny Cash there. And in fact, the one strange story is that they say that some of the fans are still haunting there. They have people have been there and heard screaming girls and fans cheering as they open the doors. Some other stories are that there are doors that open and close by themselves. So that place is haunted. And then Memorial Hall in Kansas City, Patsy Cline is reportedly still there. That was her last show. It was a benefit concert for a DJ who died. And then she left there and perished in a plane crash.
When most of them die, are they the ones that are doing the hauntings?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't have a very good answer for it because, again, you get into this whole notion of, is it the fans who want to see their star, their favorite musician, or is it the musician that actually leaves a little piece of themselves back in those places?
It's going to take some calls here for you, Matthew, as they begin to line up. We have Steve, truck driving in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Anyway, I look forward to your third book, Haunted Blues. I mean, that's got to be going to happen.
Hey, that's a great idea. And certainly there would be enough material there with a lot of the haunted juke joints, and I would have probably a whole chapter of ghost stories about Robert Johnson.
Oh, absolutely, and especially the nameless ones. I used to drive from the southeast. I'd stop anywhere I could and not get stuck in the mud and hang out for a while, and just the stories I heard and overheard were just fantastic. But what I was actually calling to ask about is that I used to live in Bakersfield, and a couple blocks from my house there was the Crystal Palace, Buck Owens place, and if you had any information or stories on that.
No, you know, I did look into that, and I personally want Buck Owens still to be around. I found just a few stories that the place was haunted before Buck, but I couldn't get any confirmation. So I kind of left that out of the book. But yeah, I really wanted that to happen. Now, have you ever come across any stories from Preston Castle?
He hung up.
Oh, okay.
But tell me about Preston Castle.
Well, Preston Castle was where Merle Haggard had spent some time. It was, it was kind of an institution for wayward boys, and Merle was one of those folks. And The one story is that a woman, a worker, was killed there, and that she haunts that place. And I tried to find if there were any, if Merle ever talked about it, because he would have been there after that murder. So he never mentioned anything. But that's, I kind of equate, you know, when he mentions Bakersfield, I think about the Bakersfield Sound. And then when I think of Bakersfield Sound, I think of Buck Owens and Merle Haggard.
Matthew, how do we know that ghosts haven't been responsible for some of the tragic deaths of some of these country stars?
That's also an interesting question, and it didn't make it into the book, but there is somewhat of an underground legend that the Ryman is cursed. And I think there were like 30-some people who performed at the Ryman who later died tragically, and we could put Hank Williams there, Patsy Cline. I don't have much more to go on than that. So could it be Captain Ryman wreaking revenge on these secular singers? I don't know, but there's room for a sequel then.
Sure is. Okay, let's go to Joe in the Bronx on the wild card line.
Hey,
Joseph.
Bill, George.
Good.
How are you?
Still there, Joe?
I'm sorry about that. I wanted to ask your guest, George, if there are any haunted recording studios. There's a famous photo of Elvis, Johnny Cash, and Carl Perkins. Do you have any haunted recording studio stories?
Well, I think the one you're referring to is Sun Studios. And in both books, I attempted to find ghost stories about Sun Studios because I was there. And my story is that when I was there, the guide took us over to the microphone stand, and he, you know, he put me and my friends there, and then he said, at the exact spot that you're standing, Johnny Cash sang this song, and then he played a Johnny Cash song, and the chills that I felt. Now, I can't say that it was supernatural or anything, but boy, you just feel the presence of those legends there. So I spent literally hours and days trying to find a confirmed person that would go on record or an article where they talk about the hauntings. I have yet to find that. I have talked to people who have talked to people who say that Sun Studios is haunted. In rock and roll, there are several, and I'm getting some reports that Prince's studio, Paisley Park, is haunted. So, you know, I'm working on those, but I didn't have any haunted studios for country that I can remember.
Check out one called The Mansion, which is a mansion studio.
Rick Rubin's.
That's right, on Laurel Canyon in L.A., and that apparently is haunted, and apparently one of the owner's sons at the time pushed his girlfriend off the balcony or something like that.
That's yeah. I wrote about that in Haunted Rock and Roll.
Aha.
And that one, you're absolutely right. And there are a few rock and roll haunted studios.
Let's go to Don in Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. There's an old song. It's done by, I believe his name is Roy Buchanan, I think back in the 70s, country western song. But he talks about chasing a haint out of his house. I don't remember what the title of the song is, but it's got the word haint in it. But a lot of the old country western songs or whatever, there's a lot about verses about ghosts and hauntings and things like that. That's all I got, guys. Thanks.
Okay. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't heard that of that song. I do know that Merle Kilgore wrote a song about the Bell Witch, and Johnny Cash wrote the Ballad of Annie Palmer, who was a pretty was known as a, they think was a witch or was involved in voodoo and killed her husband. A couple husbands, apparently, as well as some of her slaves. And that estate was located near Johnny Cash's Cinnamon Hill.
These jukeboxes, Matthew, that play when they're not even plugged in, do they even have the disc or the music in the jukebox, or does that just pop up?
Sometimes that just pops up because I think it was when I wrote about this jukebox that played Patsy Cline. I don't think Patsy Cline's songs were even in the jukebox at that time.
It just plays it on its own.
Yep.
Perry in Santa Barbara, California is on the wild card line. Hi, Perry. Perry, you with us? Nope. The ghost took him away. Let's try Richie, though, in West Virginia. Go ahead, Richie.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Richie. Gentlemen. Thank you.
Hey, how you guys doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Hey, I just happened to be calling from the town that Hank Williams happened to pass away in Oak Hill, West Virginia.
Wow.
Yeah, the spot he actually died is actually right around the corner from where
I live.
Oh, my God.
Synchronicity.
Right across the Oak Hill Library. And I basically, one of the last stops of the story he stopped at was at a little restaurant called the Skyline Drive in the Hilltop, West Virginia. You go back the old road waiting to come in, and that's where the driver pulled over at a gas station that's no longer there, and that's where he supposedly had died mysteriously. But have you ever had any stories of any hauntings from the Hank Williams trail or anything here? I mean, I've never heard anything, and I've lived here all my life.
There are ghost stories all up along.
All over the place, right?
Yeah, and especially along this legendary death ride, which starts in Nashville. And the story goes that Hank was not feeling well, and he contacted a driver to drive his, I think it's a 52 Cadillac, to a gig in Ohio. And it would be somewhat comic if it wasn't so tragic. I think he tried to take a flight. There's one story that the weather diverted him. The other story is that he was just too drunk and disorderly.
Yeah. Died in the back seat of the car, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then he goes to Knoxville. He stays at the Andrew Johnson Hotel, and then they drive. And as the caller said, he dies in West Virginia. But you have ghost stories in Nashville with him. He reportedly haunts the Andrew Johnson, which I don't think is a hotel anymore, but people have said they've seen this long, lanky figure, a shadow walking down the halls, and it looks about the size of Hank Williams. And then I did get some people who said that or reported that they have seen the ghost of Hank Williams right where that caller was, right around that gas station, and have heard Hank Williams songs being played mysteriously. So there, all along that trail, you'll find ghosts of Hank Williams.
Why do we still get stories of Elvis sightings that he's still alive?
I wonder that too. And the issue I have, especially when I'm writing about Elvis, is there's just so many layers of this. So if you consider this, there are some people that believe Elvis is still alive. And then you have some people who believe Elvis is a ghost. Then you have people who impersonate Elvis. And then you have people who, his friends, who dress like him, acted like him. So when you're looking at an Elvis ghost story, for instance, for me, there was a picture circulated, I think, right after Elvis died in the late 70s, and it seemed to show Elvis in the pool house, sitting, rather relaxed. But a lot of people say, well, that proves that he's still alive. There were other people who said maybe that was just an Elvis impersonator who wandered into the house. Other people said, well, that's one of Elvis's friends. You know, he had this posse, the Memphis Mafia. And so it's really hard to tell whether or not this is a ghost story or simply an urban legend revolving around Elvis. I think what it says is just how profoundly Elvis has affected us, that we just can't let him go.
We can't let go.
We want him to be alive,
yeah,
or whether we want him as a ghost.
I remember as a kid, they said that John F. Kennedy was in a vegetative state, but still alive. And
yeah.
It's just strange how these stories just keep, you know, growing and growing and growing. People just can't let go.
Right, right. And I think that's it. That's exactly right.
We have Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hello, Barry.
You might know, George, I'll tell you what, now I've got a good paranormal and ghost type rock and roll story. Do either one of y'all remember the time that Jerry Lee Lewis set his piano on fire because he had to play before Chuck Berry, the headliner of a rock show.
I heard about that.
Yes. Well, he got to where he was carrying around about a half of a truckload of Ronco lighter fluid, and when he got mad about things like that, he would set his piano on fire. Well, one night he was on a show with Little Jimmy Dickens, and String Bean was on there. I don't remember if you remember both of those names.
I remember String Bean.
Yep. Anyway, he was tragically killed. He and his wife both murdered by some people broke in his house, but that's a different story. Anyway, they Jerry Lee had played last. He was the headliner. So they were outside, get ready to leave, just talking, and Jimmy Dickens and String Bean, they were there when Jerry Lee opened his trunk to put some luggage and stuff in there, a big Cadillac or whatever, and he had a whole bunch of cases of this Ronco lime fluid. And they said, "My God, man, if you have a car wreck of any kind, that stuff is going to blow up dynamite." And sure enough, they unloaded about three quarters of it and threw it in a dumpster type trash can or something way back. Oh, this was about 10 years after it had happened, you know, with Chuck Berry. And I want you to know that Jerry Lee was leaving the show at about 4 in the morning, drunk, all of them drunk, and this other drunk came roaring up behind him in the parking lot of the honky tonk and crashed into the back of the Cadillac and started a fire that didn't blow, and they all three jumped out and ran like hell and got a certain amount of way, and all what was left of that lighter fluid blew up.
Oh,
jeez. That's a great story. Super story. And he's right. Jerry Lee Lewis was going to be on stage with Chuck Berry, who's 90 years old, by the way, and just has another album coming out, and he's still touring. That's what's amazing. But he didn't want to be upstaged by Chuck Berry, so he burned his piano down.
I've never heard that story, but it certainly sounds like our Jerry Lee, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Matthew, take a couple seconds here, mention your website again and where we can get your books.
www.mattswayne.com, and you can find it on at amazon.com. just add Ghosts of Country Music to the search engine there, and it should pop up. Please visit your bookstores and see that it's in there. And also, if you can give me a good Amazon.com review, that would be great.
Super. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast with Matthew Swain. And we are going to take final phone calls, so don't touch your dial. George Norrie back with you, and Matthew Swain with us. Our final segment as we talk about his work, Ghosts of Country Music. Very thorough job, by the way, Matthew, and what a unique subject. Good for you.
Thank you very much. But I have to say, your listeners are amazing. They're reaching out to me now with stories of the Crystal Palace and Preston Castle. And it just amazes me. The last time I was on here, I had a similar reaction with Haunted Rock and Roll. I really feel like I've only scratched the surface of these things, and that a lot of these stories remain oral. They're just friends telling friends stories, and unless you're in that circle. So a show like this introduces me to a whole new realm of this type of stuff.
We have by far the most intelligent audience that listens to radio of any show, any place. And I mean, we get all this stuff every day, early day, you know, those kind of shows. Mm-hmm. But this audience is so well educated, informed. They know things from everything, current events to ghosts, searching for Bigfoot. They're on top of things. It's just
it's amazing.
It really is. Matthew, as you look at this, and you're middle of the road, but have you had skeptics come up to you saying, "Come on, I don't believe this about ghosts or this or the ghost of Hank Williams?
I work as a research writer, so there are a lot of awkward pauses when I, you know, say I write about this stuff. But what I find is that people in groups tend to have a party line, but when they're individuals, you all of a sudden see that they're kind of open and they do have their doubts. It might be a believer who might have a doubt in that and become more skeptical. It might be a skeptic who becomes more of a believer. And it's one of the reasons I wrote the epilogue in the book about some of my experiences with skeptics. But one of my favorite stories about a skeptic is that after a book signing, this lady came up to me and she said, you know, I don't believe in ghosts. I'm a complete skeptic. And I thought, oh, no, here it comes. But she said, you know, I learned so much about rock and roll from reading this book, and I'm more interested in learning about these people. So if at the end of the day, tomorrow, someone would prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that ghosts don't exist to me, I would still say that this stuff is important. It's important, sure, because it carries on these legends of these really important artists.
Let's go to the phones again. Keith in Rochester, New York. Welcome to the show. Hi, Keith.
Patsy Cline and Joseph Stalin died exactly 10 years apart. Stalin, the 5th of March, 1953. Miss Cline, the 5th of March, 1963. Another example, Andy Griffith of the Mayberry Show,
yeah,
sang country gospel. He and Marilyn Monroe were born on the same day, the 1st of June, 1926. From a point of numbers and pure symmetry, things symmetrical, do you think in the universe different spirits, especially good and evil, or just spirits who never on earth would have thought of being in touch with each other, do you think, since you believe in an afterlife, that in the universe, just from their numbers, dimension, and just them maybe interacting in the divine, if Patsy Cline were to come into the presence of the spirit of Stalin, would there have been a neutralizing effect without me being foolish? Would different spirits who would have acted differently on Earth, would they be changed in the afterlife? I've always wondered, since Andy Griffith was a pretty good guy, if he had ever come into Marilyn Monroe's life while she was alive, so much hurting, could Andy Griffith have changed Marilyn's life around? There are just different
good point.
Semblances of life in the here and now that when they were living and now past. I'm just wondering for you, sir, if they ever interact.
That's very interesting.
And do you believe in heaven and hell, Matthew?
I don't. Okay. I believe in those as dimensions of consciousness.
So you don't think that Joseph Stalin is burning in brimstone? Or
he might be doing some karmic retraining, I would say.
Okay, but go ahead. I'll let you react to Keith's question.
Well, yeah, you know, you do come across a lot of these numeric, some would say coincidences, synchronicities. It's actually an idea I'm trying to build out for another book about celebrity synchronicities. But Robert Johnson, who a lot of people consider the grandfather of rock and roll, that famous blues player, he died on August 16th, 1938. And of course, Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll, he dies also on August 16th, 1977. So there are these numeric coincidences that I find throughout the book. Gary Patterson, I think, does a much better job at exploring those.
Gary's one of the best. I've done some live stage shows, and of course he's been on our show a zillion times, but he's a dedicated researcher. He's baffled by the 27 Club, all those stars that died at the age of 27. Yeah, he's just, he's in shock over that.
Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, he, for me, originated the whole idea of the 27 Club. I can't really remember thinking about it before I read his book. And I touch on it in Haunted Rock and Roll, and some of the ideas that I came across was the idea that if you add the 2 and the 7, you get 9, which is the poet's number or the philosopher's number. There's another kind of legend that said Robert Johnson is the first member of the 27 Club. He dies at 27.
Yeah.
And so these other artists who die at 27 may have you know, somehow signed their own deal with the devil.
Julia in Salt Lake City, Utah is with us now. Hi, Julia, go ahead.
Hi, originally I'm from Lima, Peru, but I've listened to this radio for more than 5 years, and that's very interesting people, especially you, George.
Thank you, Julia.
Anyway, my experience is regarded by my dad. When he died, May 5, 1995, he was a heavy guy. He was very tall.
Mm-hmm.
It was very hard to pick up from the floor because he had cancer. And my mom, she always coming to help me to, you know, to pick up my dad. Well, the day that he died, me with my brother, my little brother, would pick up my dad to put him from one bed to the other bed so
yeah.
he can take it to the morgue. He didn't have any weight. He was like a, his waist chain.
Huh.
It was very light.
Like a feather?
Yeah, my father, when he died, his weight changed, so he no was heavy like was before. Then we have to.
That's strange. I've heard a little bit of the ghostly ectoplasm has some weight to it, but that was like in grams, not pounds.
Yeah, I've heard.
That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
Thanks, Julie. Appreciate that. Next up, let's go to Matt in Alabama. Welcome to the show. Hi, Matt.
Hey, first time getting on the show.
Where'd you go, Matt? You still there?
Yes.
Okay, good. Almost lost you.
That's okay.
You're just saying, first time on the show and you're gone.
Yeah.
Hell? But go ahead.
Yes, is this Brother George?
Yes, it is.
Okay, you know, I just wanted to bring a Christian perspective to the program.
All right.
According to anybody that passes on, that goes to heaven, always takes their physical body with them, whether it be Moses in the book of you know, Jude, or Jesus Christ when he ascended,
right.
or Enoch or Elijah. The physical body has to be there. What's in the ground is just, you know, the carcass, basically, and at the last trump, they'll have life again. So what you're seeing are what's called poltergeists or mischievous spirits, or as the Bible calls them, familiar spirits, when you see, like, Aunt Effie, you know, standing on mm-hmm. the side of the bed and giving you a nice smile.
Are they tricksters?
Yes, exactly right.
Tricksters. What do you think of that, Matthew? Tricksters.
Well, you know, that does come up a lot, and that's certainly some of the theories that they are trickster spirits that are interacting with people. So I have, and I've written a little bit about that and include that as a theory in some of those chapters, because it's in Western culture, that's a very popular belief. And country music certainly would carry that on. I mean, when I talk about Thomas Ryman, the experience there of those loud rapping noises would be similar to a poltergeist. And that's one of the phenomena involved in numerous poltergeist encounters.
Doing the research for you for this book, Ghosts of Country Music, did you stumble across anything that was surprising or shocking to you?
You know, I think I was more shocked and amazed with Johnny Cash's openness to the supernatural. I did not remember him ever telling ghost stories. But
really, do you think June Carter was that way too?
I think so.
His wife?
I think the whole group was. I think they were all believers. Now, I didn't come across anything where June talked about seeing a ghost or wrote in the biography, but. But Johnny was very open with his exploration in the supernatural.
Well, and he always wore black, didn't he?
He did, yep.
I wonder if that had anything to do with it.
It possibly could, yeah.
Amazing. Okay, Matthew, do you travel much? Do you go to speaking engagements or, you know, ghostly conventions?
I really haven't done that circuit so much. I've gone on some book tours and locally. I talk about it a lot. Believe it or not, I work at Penn State, and they've been very actually encouraging about my approach to this. So I've talked on campus at a couple different venues about ghost lore and ghost stories, and especially what role they play in universities and maintaining the culture of universities.
Well, you do great work. In the name of the book, Ghosts of Country Music. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.